Welcome to the Ministry Marks podcast. I'm David Haynes, and I'm joined by Thomas Majors. Thomas, today's topic is calling a staff member. What do you know about that?
Well, I don't really know anything about that. not sure that's ever happened once in my ministry. Well, that's not absolutely true, because when I was at Pleasant Ridge, we called two staff members when I was at Pleasant Ridge. We called a staff member when I was at Holly. And since being at Ingomar, we've called a staff member. I'm sure you've had some similar experiences.
Yeah, I have. So whenever we were at Trinity Baptist, we called a few staff members. And I guess we called two youth ministers, and we called two worship leaders. And now at First Baptist Senatobia, we have called one full-time minister on staff. We've called two part-time assistants, but yes, we have called a full-time youth minister. So yes, we just want to kind of talk about what it is like in calling a staff member.
So let's just think about this really quickly. What's the old seminary kind of answer about a staff member? Like, if you call a new staff member, how many families can you pick up from that? Oh, have you ever heard that before?
No, I've never. So all this is new to me. I've never heard anything of what you're talking about.
Yeah. Seriously?
Yeah, never
heard. So I remember in seminary, you know, talking about like church growth and the need of a staff member, that usually if a church calls a staff member, they can think to themselves at least 10 new families are going to come to the church because of that staff member, because he's going to have, he or she, I guess, is going to have a different realm of influence. They're sure. going to be at different places. They're going to live in a different little community, a different road, and they're going to call and use their influence to bring more people to the church.
Gotcha.
And then also on top of that, you just think about, you know, the added administrative power that brings. And when things kind of work together administratively, people want to be involved. You know, if they feel like there's a plan and a progression to something, they want to be involved, unless it's, you know, people don't want to be involved in like chaos. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that makes sense.
So what about the need for a staff member? How does a church determine if there's a need for a staff member in the church?
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about that a little bit. I think the majority of staff members that are called feel positions that already existed. So basically, a youth minister leaves, the church says, hey, we need a youth minister, let's get another youth minister. But what we're really talking about or thinking about is the addition of a staff member, the addition of calling a new person on staff. And so I think it goes back to the need. I think you've got to articulate, you must articulate a need. Right now, our church is deficient in whatever area it may be. And then you see a deficiency in ministry or service. And then you say, okay, if we call a staff member to take over this ministry or take over this service, then this is something that could be accomplished under the umbrella of the ministry of our church. And so I believe calling a staff member must be to fill a need.
Right. And I agree. I think most of the time what happens is that one person leaves, and then they just want to fill that spot. So it's kind of like you have a vacuum. There are no natural vacuums, right?
Yeah.
In our world today, there's no natural vacuums. You got a vacuum that takes place, something rushes in to fill it. And so if you got a youth minister who leaves and goes from your church to another church, well, automatically the idea is, well, we need to fill that position.
Yeah.
Rarely does it occur that a person leaves and they decide not to fill it, right?
I agree. And I think most would view that as a decrease in ministry. You mean we're not going to minister to said group? And so I think if someone leaves and there is, and this, it is not filled, let's say, I think it would be easier if there's a full-time position, and because of budgetary issue or whatever the issue is, if you want to go to part-time ministry position, that would be easier easier to accept on the behalf of a church member than to say, we're simply not going to fill this role that has been occupied by 5 years by Minister whomever who has just left. I think that would be very hard to do.
What would that say about the church if they decided to do that?
That would say that either that previous minister, they viewed him as worthless. You know, we think that guy did nothing. So we're not even going to fill this. We'll be better off with nobody than with that joker. So, yeah.
Or it could be that they're seeing a trajectory even in their own ministry that they're not going to need that person anymore because they don't have the people to minister to. Right?
That's right. Whether it's children, youth, senior adults, you know, I don't think a church would say we don't need a pastor. I think all churches would say they need a pastor, but I believe it would be in the other avenues that are not as visible on Sunday morning. I think the primary position is that church members think we need a pastor, we need a worship leader. And once you get beside that, is the more behind the scenes is senior adults, it's administrative, you know, children, youth, whatever. So,
all right. So you just said something.
Okay. I said something?
Yeah. Oh, wow, you said something very important.
I didn't even pick up on it.
You said, I don't think a church would decide they don't need a pastor.
Yeah.
I know of a church right now who's been without a pastor for about 6 or 7 years.
What? 6 or 7? What? Okay. All right, hang on. So I do not know who this church is. No. We have not discussed this.
No, we have not.
We have not discussed. All right. So is this church using an interim pastor, or are they using itinerant ministers to fill the pulpit as needed?
Itinerant ministers to fill the pulpit as needed. They will ask that person to come for a particular period of time, maybe a month or so, or 2 months. And then they might ask even longer than that and do it. Use the same person for a number of months, 5 or 6.
Yeah.
But then eventually they always get someone else. I don't know if it's them, or I don't know if it's the itinerant minister who decides not to, but for years, 7, 8 years, maybe now, this church does not have a pastor. I think they have the budget to have a pastor.
Okay. I was going to say, I think this is maybe a financial decision. Yeah.
I think it's an authority issue.
Oh, we don't want to submit to the authority of the pastor.
I think they want to rule themselves.
Yeah.
And they don't want to have a pastor who has a sense of authority over them. That I'm not going to say what church it is. You can just that have to ask me once we hit that button and it's not recording anymore. And I'll tell you, but I think it's an authority issue.
Wow, that is something. Yes, okay, obviously, every church needs a pastor.
Right.
We agree. Yes. Every church needs a pastor.
Yes.
Definitely. And then depending upon the size, depending upon the budget, depending upon the specific ministry for that church in that area, other staff members may or may not be added, just depending on upon those things. So, yeah.
So, the next staff member that's usually added to a church, what staff person is that?
Okay. So, in my history, I think it's a youth minister.
And in our part of the world, I would say youth minister.
Yep. So, number one is pastor. Number two is youth minister. But I just said a little bit ago, I think the most two important positions are pastor and then worship leader. And so, let me revise that a little bit. I think the two most visible staff members are pastor and worship leader. Typically in a Baptist church in North Mississippi, the worship service is going to be about an hour long. We typically say the worship service will be between 20 and 30 minutes, and the preaching and invitation will be between 30 and 40 minutes is typically what it is. And so at any church on any given Sunday, that hour, you're looking for a large percentage of that time at the worship leader, choir director, soloist, whatever the worship leader does there, and you're looking at the pastor. So I think those are the most two visible areas of ministry.
All right. So that's an interesting thing too, because you got the pastor who's going to be a paid staff person. Mm-hmm. Most churches do have a worship leader of some
that's
sense,
right.
A song leader, but they may not be paid.
They may not be paid.
The next paid staff member probably is going to be a youth minister, right?
Because I agree.
They see that as a specialty.
Yes.
A special affinity kind of group within the church that needs someone that can speak to them in their own place. Whereas a worship leader, they might get, Brother Joe, who's picking and grinning out on the square to come and lead, and that's who can lead very well on a Sunday morning or a Sunday night, but they might not pay Brother Joe for doing that.
That's right. And let me give some credit to churches in North Mississippi. I think we as pastors and then we as Baptist churches often view calling a youth minister as a step in discipleship. Our pastor that we love is going to now tutor and disciple this young youth minister who one day may or may not be a senior pastor. He's going to pour into him. And if in 5 years, this guy leaves, the youth minister leaves to go be the pastor somewhere, we will know that he was trained well by our pastor and our church. And our church will set him up for success. That's kind of what I think.
So when we're thinking about a need of a staff member, and hypothetically, we've been talking mainly about a youth minister here. And so a big need of a staff member when it comes to like a youth minister would be discipleship. Would you put a number on it? Would there need to be so many youth, or would you say, well, if we got three youth, then we need a staff person. We need a minister who can minister directly to them. What's that need?
Okay. So whenever you ask about a number, the first number that came to my mind was three. That's exactly what I thought. If we got Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over there in a fiery furnace, we're going to put a youth guy in there with them. So, that's exactly what I thought. All right. So let's go all the way back to 2005. 2005 is before you and I met. We met in the fall of...
That was a good time.
Of 07. Man, it was good before I ever knew you. Boy, my life's gone downhill since then. So, 05, I had served for 4 years as a youth minister at a church in Alcorn County. And so I was a youth guy. That's what I did. And I left that church. I was preaching that at Little Creek Baptist Church. I preached there for 6 weeks just as an itinerant minister. I preached there every Sunday morning and Sunday night. And then they voted me in as pastor. Little Creek, really good church. A little bit different. That was not a SBC church. That was a independent missionary Baptist church. And they had two guys on the ballot. I'm not going to tell you what the other guy's name was, but they were on their ballot to call a pastor. It was my name, David Haynes, and then it was another guy's name.
Oh, wow.
And they said, Mark won. And I wasn't there. I wasn't there whenever they voted, or I'd have voted for me. but anyway, so I got like 75% of that vote. And then the church then read the results. David Haynes got 75% of the vote. This other guy got 25% of the votes, whatever it was. And then they unanimously called me as pastor. You know what I mean?
Yes,
so it's kind of weird. So after that, one of the deacons, I did his funeral about 3 years ago, one of the deacons at that very first church, such a blessing to me and my wife. We were so close with him. He was an older, wise guy. And he came to me and he said, I want to tell you why I voted for you to be my pastor. And I said, well, why? He said, well, if you remember during the deacons did the interviewing, the deacons were the pastor search team at that first church that I served. And he said, we asked both candidates, what would you do with our youth? And he told me, he said, you said that you had been working with youth for 4 years. He said, you were 25 years old and that you would get basically down in the trenches with the youth. You would teach the youth Sunday school class if need be and all this kind of stuff that I did and that I said I would do. He said, we asked the other candidate, what will you do with our youth? And he said, and this guy at that time was probably 50 or 55. He said, I'll hire somebody to do that. And he said, right then, he said, I knew that I wanted a pastor who would work with our youth, not just hire somebody to be the youth guy. And that is one thing that led to me going there as that. So now that church was small, had a small group, but they did not want to hire a youth minister. And the whole time I was there, I was the only paid staff member, and they never hired a youth minister or anything like that.
All right. We can talk about this some other time.
Okay, good.
But, and this might be something we want to explore in another podcast.
Yeah.
But do you hire staff persons so you don't have to do ministry?
Of course not.
No.
Of course not. That's not the reason at all. No. You hire staff members to boss them around. I'm kind of playing.
Kind of.
And you've mentioned something really good. So do you do you hire staff members or does the church call staff members?
Oh, that's good. That's good. The church calls staff members. Of course, we know that the Lord sends them, the church calls them, but we do typically, and I don't like that terminology. I shouldn't have used it. I shouldn't have said something.
I said it first. Don't worry.
But seriously, sometimes people, and especially maybe pastors or senior pastors, might take that philosophy of, let's get this person so I don't have to do that.
Yeah.
But for me, I want to be involved in all aspects of ministry. Don't you?
I do. Now, I will agree. I will say this. Someone told me this whenever I first started working on my doctorate way back when, 2017-ish, whatever. Yeah. Someone said, you're going to find in your doctoral classes that every class is specific to what you're studying. Basically, you're going to enjoy this, but you don't have to worry about, you know, at the undergrad level, we had to worry about science and math and history. And then the master's degree level, it was more focused. And then for the doctorate, it was extremely focused. Right. So I do think that if the Lord blesses and a minister is able to go to larger churches, 50, then 150, and then, you know, whatever it is, I believe that one's ministry can become more specific.
Yeah.
I know whenever I first went to First Baptist Senatobia 17 months ago, someone basically said this, what do you really like to do? I said, I like preaching and loving people. That's it. They said, okay, that's all you have to do. Preach and love people. We'll take care of everything else. And I'm like, you're kidding me. Mm-hmm. This is a dream come true. And 17 months in, it is still, I preach and I love people. Yeah. And that's it. Everything else is basically taken care of. So it's really good. So I've become more focused in my ministry. There's a lot of ministry that I'm just not good at. So, you know, and I've learned that down through the years.
Yeah. And I would definitely say, you know, I don't want to speak every Wednesday night to the youth for sure. For sure. You know, the Lord has not gifted me in that way, but I don't want to just segregate myself from the youth either. You know, I want to be part of that ministry and in some sense, and have some connection. I don't want to make all the administrative decisions for the youth ministry either, though. So we definitely want to think about a need. And so we see a need, fill a need, right?
Yeah, yeah.
See a need, fill a need. Was that from a Pixar movie?
I don't know.
See a need, fill a need. It sounds like it's from a Pixar movie. I've heard that somewhere before.
Man, that's really
but that's
good.
True, right? In ministry, we see a need. There's these students who need someone to shepherd them in their context, right? Shepherd them with the word of God in their own context and then their own language. So that discipleship need may be same true for associate pastor or a senior adult pastor, but we understand there's a need. So then we move to like a job description, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what's your process of working through a job description? Is there a profile? Yeah. You're looking for something in particular? Let's just throw out a hypothetical youth pastor.
Gotcha. Okay. So the job description, in my opinion, needs to be need oriented. This is what the needs, these are the needs. So these are the responsibilities that will cover the needs. So I think those need to be similar. But when I think about job description, my preference is less and not more. Some job descriptions are so detailed, whether it's for a youth minister, worship leader, associate, whatever, pastor, whatever, they are so detailed where there seems to be no give and take for the special strengths of the potential minister. Whoever this minister is, he has to do A, B, C. Well, what if minister isn't gifted in A, B, C, but he's God's man or she's God's woman for that ministry position at that time? What if they're not gifted in that way? Let that person's strengths shine. So that's what I think. I think it needs to start with a need, and the job description should fill the needs, but have flexibility for the minister. What do you think?
So in the sense you're talking about, like, lead a Bible study each Wednesday night, not be so specific, preach an expository sermon for 30 minutes each Wednesday night, and then move to pick up your guitar and lead them in kumbaya after you, after you've preached for that 30 minutes. So in a sense, it's generalized. What are the things that we really want this person to do?
There you go.
Which are usually, you know, for any staff person, and I always tell this to my students, it's something that I've learned. The guy who came up with it, his name was Alan Mosley, the three primary tasks of a pastor. And I always say that it's really the three primary tasks for any staff member, and that's proclaiming, leading, and caring. So proclaiming, you know, talking about the word of God, leading a song about the word of God, whatever it may be, leading the administrative kind of things, leading people, doing the work of the ministry, making sure budgets line out, planning certain events, and then caring, that is, you know, shepherding those people, walking beside them. And so in a sense, what you're saying is that a staff person, if you're going to begin looking at that profile, it should be generalized in some kind of area, like maybe a proclaiming, leading, caring type aspect.
Sure. That's what I think. All right. So as we're talking about this, do you prefer a set level of education?
I in a sense I do. In a sense I do. Now, if I'm looking for a person who is, and maybe I'm biased. I'm just sitting here thinking to myself, I started to say something else, but maybe I'm just a little bit biased because I have been to college.
Sure.
I have been to seminary. I have been to, you know, doctoral studies. And so I'm a bit biased in a sense, but I just remember something that Ron Harrison told me.
Oh, Ron. Boy, we hadn't mentioned Ron on this podcast in a number of years.
And he probably doesn't even remember saying this.
Yeah, he's never going to listen to this anyhow.
No, he's not. only three people listen to this. My mom.
My mama.
My wife doesn't even listen to it. And probably somebody from Corinth or something. You know, Abby Jones probably listens to this. So what he said to me, he said one time he was talking about a staff member. They were looking for a staff member at their church. And he said, well, we want to find somebody who has a bachelor's degree. And I was like, oh, yeah. So kind of, I think I said something about, so they know something. He's like, no. He says, if they have a bachelor's degree, I know they've had pressure on them and they've done the work and they've been committed to something for a period of time.
Gotcha.
And so in his idea in that moment was that, you know, a degree at least says they've committed themselves to something.
Yeah.
And they've been under pressure for a long period of time.
Yeah.
And they did not break. They came through it. And so in a sense, I want someone with at least a bachelor's degree or some type of degree, maybe even associate's degree. But I guess, honestly, if I'm going to speak, you know, from a Christian standpoint, I want God's person.
Yeah,
I do.
Yeah.
But I think that education tells us something about their experiences.
It does. You know, and the Lord has a way of bringing all that together. Years ago, whenever I was at Trinity Baptist, we were looking for a staff member. I called some of my friends just to ask for words of advice. And David Hamilton, who's a dear friend of both of us, gave some really good advice. And it's a tongue twister. And I remember it. It is so good. This is what he said when calling a staff member. Those you won't you. And those who want you, you won't. You get it? You get it?
Yeah.
W-O-N-T and W-A-N-T.
Say it three times really quick.
I can't. but it is true. Those, whenever you post a job description or whenever you post, or whenever, even if it's by word of mouth, we'll talk about that in a little bit, there will be people who will contact you. And as soon as they contact you, say, this is not the place for them. They will serve well somewhere, just not here, thankfully.
It's not you.
Yeah.
It's us.
It's us. Yeah.
I'm sorry. This ain't going to work out, but it's not really you.
That's right.
It's us.
And
we're just not in that place right now.
And that church will reach out to a primary target, and that target will then say, well, you know, it's not you. You're a good church, but it's just me. Right now, you know, it's just me. So, yeah.
It is really you.
It goes both ways, man. So yeah, but I agree. There is an aspect of education that you want. Whenever you and I both earned our doctorate around the same year, I think I defended in March of 20. You defended in December of 20.
That's correct.
Shortly after that, someone told me, "Congratulations! Do you know what an earned doctorate means?" And this was an older gentleman. I said, "No, I don't remember what I don't know what it means." He said, "It means you won't quit." He said, "Congratulations for not quitting whenever times got tough." Because dude, earning a bachelor's, master's, and doctorate. Tough times come.
Bunch of tough times. Yeah,
that's right. And that's what he said. It means simply that you won't quit. So I like what Ron said about a bachelor's degree, that they've been under pressure and have responded. They responded in an adequate enough, had an adequate enough response to earn a degree, because in ministry, there is pressure. It's not often. It's not every day, but there is pressure.
Yeah. And you got to be able to start something and finish something.
Yep.
And so there's education at least says I've started something. I had the wisdom to start something. I had the endurance to finish it.
That's right. That's right.
So what about experience?
Yeah. Okay. All right. So there are two sides of this coin. The way I have this in my mind is there is good experience and there is bad experience. Ooh, yeah. I would rather have somebody with no experience than bad experience. And what I mean by bad experience, I don't mean, oh, that person had a bad experience. I don't mean that. I mean, that person has learned something incorrect. Let me tell you a story. Way back when I was a senior in high school and I did a vocational program that would get a person a job that would connect seniors in high school in Alcorn County, that would connect them with part-time jobs, 25 hours a week as a senior in high school. And if you did well, you had the potential to go full time. And, started installing windshields. Absolutely. Sure did. And loved that job. And so I interviewed for that position. At least one other person interviewed for that position. After I got the job, I was just a senior in high school. This other person was a grown man. I asked the boss, the owner of the business. I said, "Why did you hire me instead of this other person?" And he said, "I wanted someone with no experience." He said, "If you come to this with experience, there will be certain aspects that you do that will be wrong. I want to teach you everything you know about putting in door glasses, back glasses, windshields. I want to teach you everything about it so that you do it my way." Okay.
Okay. Yep.
So you get what I mean?
Yes.
A person who learns bad tricks at a previous ministry position will detriment the current staff that they're called to serve with. So give me a dude that ain't got any experience over somebody who's going to bring difficulty into our staff. You know what I mean?
And maybe this is a podcast for another time.
Yeah.
We could talk about bad experiences. Sure. In a sense, you know, what is bad experience? But we have talked about overcoming bad advice. Like, what's the bad advice that people give to preachers?
Because we get it all the time.
We get a bunch of bad advice. And I've been given bad advice before.
Have you ever given bad advice?
All the time. Okay. I just want to see if they're going to persevere through it. But I agree. I think I can see what you're saying there, that no experience is better than bad experience. But we do probably, I know for this last staff position that we filled at Ingomar, we wanted some experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It didn't have to be a lot of experience. It didn't have to be an experience like at a church relative our size, mm-hmm. but we wanted some experience to know that this person understands what ministry is about.
Absolutely. If we can equate it to swimming, if there is a child who has never swam, we ain't going to push him in the deep end of a pool. No way. And so we want, in ministry settings, we want someone with some experience. Maybe you haven't served at a church that size. Maybe you've never dove into a 9-foot pool, but you're really good at swimming in 4 feet of water. You can adjust to diving in 9 feet and swimming out. You can adjust to it pretty easily.
All right. So we're thinking about the calling a staff member process. All right. So we've understood the need. We recognize there's a need in the church. We begin to develop a profile for that person whom we think God may be calling.
Yeah.
So what's that next step? What's the next step in the process? You sending out, you posting on job boards and what's your experience with that? What do you think about that? How you feel about that?
Gotcha.
And then, are you mainly asking around?
Yeah. Okay. So I will do both. My preference is once the job description is solidified, the church is called a search team. We then set a date to receive resumes. We're going to receive resumes for, let's say, a 3-month period. And we project out 3 months and we say, we're not going to contact a candidate. We're not going to call a candidate. We're not going to do anything until that date gets there. Now, in that date, if it's 3 months, there will be some guys who are fantastic on paper that whenever you call them and ask if they're still available, their availability is no longer there because they've been called elsewhere. Right. And if you had contacted them as soon as you got their resume, you could have gone forward with them. But hey, that's all in the sovereignty of God. Right. God will get you to the minister that he wants you to have during that season of your church life.
So you develop the process and then you trust the process. That's what I'm hearing.
And you trust the process.
Too.
That's
you,
it.
You develop a process about, you know, this is the person I'm going to look for or we're going to look for.
Yeah.
These are some mile markers that we need to make by collecting. Are we going to collect resumes or are we not going to collect resumes?
Yeah.
Are we going to collect resumes for 3 months or not collect resumes for that 2 months or 6 months or however long it is? But then you got to trust the process.
You do.
In a sense, I always think about in Acts chapter 1.
Yeah.
When they call the next apostle who is going to replace Judas, they have this criteria. It must be a person who was with the ministry of Jesus, who was a witness to the resurrection, who had been with them since the beginning, and two names pop up. And then they cast lots.
That's it.
And the lot fell.
To what was the guy's name? Matthias.
Matthias. the lot fell to Matthias. And so many times people ask the question, did they make a mistake and they should have called Paul?
Waited to Paul.
To a Paul. Yeah. And I don't think so, because I think they had a process.
That's right.
And Paul, anyways.
And Paul 13th, hadn't been there since the beginning of the ministry.
He had not been.
Yeah.
And he's the 13th apostle, the one born out of time.
That's right.
The apostle to the Gentiles.
Yeah, that's
he's
right.
like the branch that has been grafted onto
that's
the
right.
tree.
Buddy, that'll preach.
And it's resembling. It's like us, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of
right.
like us as Gentiles. So you got to trust that process.
Yeah.
I agree with you. Do both. But I think the best results that I found at any church has been what I call shake the bushes.
Yep.
You know, you go through, you shake the bushes and you see what falls out of the bush.
Absolutely. So I've got probably 60 pastor friends in my contacts on my phone, and I will shoot them a text message with an email address that they can submit.
I've only got like two friends.
Yeah.
You got 60.
Yeah. I apologize. I didn't mean to brag. And so that's what I'll do. I'll reach out to them and just say, hey, if you know of anyone who would be a good candidate, please let me know or send this message to them that has the email address for our, you know, youth minister search, worship leader search, whatever it is. That's what I do. But yeah, dude, you're exactly right. Shaking the bushes, word of mouth, and pre-existing relationships. It is so good to kind of know someone. Right now, First Baptist Senatobia, we called a youth minister about 3 or 4 months ago. And it's a guy that I have known since he graduated high school. I have known him for a number of years. He's now 29 years old. I have known Cole for a number of years. Remember, he first went to Blue Mountain College. And so whenever we started looking at him and it became obvious and he was available, my level of reservation rested because I know him. I know him. And it's so good when you have a pre-existing relationship with a future staff member.
Exactly. At Ingomar, of course, we just called someone. They haven't been to the church yet. They haven't officially started in the capacity as youth pastor, but I knew him. Mm-hmm. I've known him for quite a few years. Yeah. Know his
since
family,
he was a teenager.
Since he was a teenager,
his
and working
daddy's
at
a preacher.
Chick-fil-A.
Yeah, yeah.
By the time this podcast comes out, I mean, I can tell you who it is. It's John Caleb Davis, and so I know him. I've seen his experiences. I've been able to watch him, and so again, yeah, that level of reservation was gone.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Because I know him, know of his family too.
Yeah, I completely agree. All right. So on posting, you asked a question earlier on posting on job sites, job boards, or even the convention or seminaries. It's kind of what I think.
Not a good response.
Yeah.
For one thing, it's not a good response. And sometimes you get people who are way underqualified.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you get people who are
way overqualified.
Way overqualified.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, why is this guy?
Yeah.
Why is this person interested in this position with us.
Yeah.
When he's been the youth pastor.
Yeah.
At Bellevue Baptist yeah. Church. Or right, I don't know. Right, we right, didn't right. get one for Bellevue Baptist yeah. Church, but some large church where yeah. they're probably dealing with a youth group of hundreds.
Yeah.
Whereas we're dealing with mm-hmm. 50, teens, yeah. you know, in the yeah. teens,
yeah. Yeah.
less than 100.
Yeah.
So some people are way overqualified.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And you do want to ask that. All right, Thomas. So what does it look like when the candidate has been narrowed down? You've got your sights set on a person, and now it's time to meet with that prospect. What do you do?
All right. So we have went through and given them questionnaires. Mm-hmm. Questionnaires that kind of reveal a little bit about their thought processes, about what they believe about certain things. And then we usually meet with that person. Mm-hmm. We meet with them for a face-to-face meeting, and we ask them many of the same questions that we've already asked them on yeah. the questionnaire. We want to see the way they respond.
Yeah.
We want to hear their responses verbally. We want to see how they interact with the people in the room. Usually for me, then we move to a meeting with, you know, if they have a spouse, then we ask that spouse to come in too after maybe in the second meeting. That way we can see the interaction between that spouse and that staff member and the yeah. way the spouse is going to interact with the people in the room as well. So it's quite a few meetings. It's really, as I always like to say, I kind of use the analogy, we go from talking to dating, mm-hmm. and then we get engaged in the mm-hmm. process. And when yeah. God calls them, it's kind of like the marriage process, yeah. you know? And so we're kind of in that talking and dating kind of yeah. analogy yeah. where we're really trying to get to know this person, asking them all of the questions we want to ask, seeing if their personality and the way they do ministry is going to relate well to the personality of yeah. the church.
Yeah, that makes sense. I know whenever we were interviewing Colo and that we recalled just a few months ago, I wanted to see that he was a quick thinker. I wanted to see him receive a problematic question, and then I wanted to see the wheels in his mind move, and then I wanted to hear an articulate response. And which I'd had Cole in the seminary class. Remember, I was an adjunct for New Orleans. Cole was yeah. in one of my classes. And so I knew that he was a quick thinker, and I knew that he would do fine on his feet. But I wanted the others in the search team to see that. And so there were two or three questions that were problematic, and I knew they were going to be, and I knew he was going to handle them fine. And he did. And after, so what we did, whenever we met with he and his wife, Mal, a couple of times, we talked with them, interviewed with them. And I noted the questions where I said, that was a hard question, but his answer was spot on. And I tried to call that to the attention of the people. And I think they appreciated him being quick thinking, because sometimes in ministry, dude, you will get something out of the blue that you were not expecting. And I wanted to see how he would cover that.
Right. And, some of the times we answer things with our face before yeah. we ever answer, don't we?
Yeah. Yeah.
And if a person comes to you and they ask you a tough question and you write it all over your face, it doesn't matter what you say yeah. afterwards, they're going to read your face first. And yeah. so a person needs to be able to think quickly on their feet, especially to theological.
That's right.
Theological questions or interrelationship kind of problems that may yeah. come up.
Yeah, I think you're right. So after you go through the process of calling, questioning, going through all the concerns, then really I think it's just going through the appropriate channels. What does the Constitution and bylaws say for this church? Does it have to be, when is the announcement? The announcement has to be on a Sunday morning, then the vote has to be the next Sunday, or the in view of a call then comes, and then the vote on that day or the following week. And each church is similar, yet each church is different. So I would say just review the Constitution and bylaws and then present the candidate and move forward knowing that the process has worked.
That's right. And even if the person doesn't get voted in, mm-hmm. know that the process has worked.
That's right.
And if the person does get voted in and it's barely the percentage, let's say it's got to be 80%, and it comes out to be 80.5.
Yep.
That means the church is extending the call.
That's right.
Whether that person responds or not and says yes, that's up to that person. But the church extends the call when it gets to that percentage, even if it's barely over that percentage. You got to trust the process.
That's right.
Well, David, thank you so much for talking with me about calling a staff member. I think this has been a good conversation.
I think so, man.
It went a lot longer than I thought it was going to go.
How long did it go? 5 minutes? 7 minutes?
39 minutes.
39 minutes? Nobody is still hanging around to the end of this.
No, they'll listen to it at least two or three times on their commute. And if they don't commute, they won't listen to it at all. Again, thank y'all for joining us for the Ministry Marks podcast. I hope you've enjoyed this. Reach out to us. Let us know some topics that you would like to hear.